Hello there, I'm Dominique Saint-Pierre, and you're listening to Go Podcast. Today, I talk about a small piece in my next SaaS that is written in Go. Hello, Gophers. So, this is another episode. This week, I will be alone, so there's no guests. So, I think I'm going to talk about something I'm working on these days, which I think it's worthy of mention and could be interesting. So, let me give you a quick background. So, I'm building a software as a service. So, basically, this project started as me building a platform to sell my own online courses. So yeah, I was using something, and they made some changes to their plan, their pricing plan, and you know, I thought, you know, it could be nice to build my own thing, and it's a project I'm trying to build for a long time now. I've iterated that over multiple versions, but you know, long story short, it was not going to be a SaaS at first. So what that means is, well, obviously I built it for myself. I did not really add any commercial plan in mind and whatnot. So once I started to use that, and I launched my last course on it basically in December. So basically I launched a platform at the same time as I launched my last course. And you know, I said to myself, you know what, this thing is nice, but I did not add any UI, so it was all like common base and just you know, just the front end, basically the blog and the place where you know, people can buy my course and the course viewer itself and whatnot. I mean, everything from a public facing point of view is done. But I was not having any kind of administration dashboard and things to create new courses and whatnot. I mean, so, but you know, long story short, so this not being a SaaS at first, so how do you turn a web application that was built for one person, basically one company, and you want to turn that into a software as a service? So at first I thought, you know what, This could be sold as a self-hosted kind of platform, so people could you know, a creator of some that want to launch a courses with community and affiliate program and whatnot, they could, you know, they could purchase the application itself and self-host it. And so that thought kind of worked for some times, but I at the end of the day I decided to go with a traditional software as a service model. But I still have this single tenant, you know, web application, and rewriting it, or I mean introducing fact that I would be able to host multiple tenant on the same application was out of the question. So it was, you know, it was not designed like that at first, so that would change so many things at the core level that I don't think it would be worth. So my other choices was, you know, what from the point of view of someone that is, you know, buying a subscription for a software, basically, how can I make that somewhat transparent for them, but for me, continue to have this, you know, single tenant web application and isolated database and everything like that. So I decided to try and build myself some very you know, something extremely simple. So I'm just a simple person, and I just like things that works, that I can explain, and I can return to that very quickly and do some modification, especially when I'm building SaaS. So when I'm building a SaaS for myself, you know, I don't go into too much over engineering thinking and trying to make things, you know, scale and things like that, because at the end of the day, you know, when I'm building a SaaS, the thing that I want to scale is my marketing, is how to acquire new customers, everything like that. So it's not at all related to the code. I still really enjoy building SAS in Go because it kind of give you, even you know, you can go very quick in Go and still be somewhat, I don't know, reassured that the code that you're putting in production is still decently going to perform well, first of all. But not only that, but I mean, you should not have too many runtime exception, or not exception, but errors, of course. But and especially as you continue to get some experience with Go, I mean, this, you know, it's basically just pointer and some kind of nil pointer that can happen in production. But at some point you don't do those things anymore, and you are left with a code base that is great. Unfortunately, I've built this thing in Django. So again, I was doing that for me, and I knew I did not want it to build any kind of administrative dashboard, you know. So I was using the Django admin interface to create my product and manage all my backend database, if you will, or every, you know, everything that needs to be done. And I have a module to send some newsletter to people that purchase my courses, and also people that just register for the newsletter. It's all done, you know, via the command line and whatnot. So I basically create a manual HTML page, and this is what is going to be sent and things like that. So I mean, I was very far from having a acceptable, you know, software as a service from the point of view of someone that, you know, wants to buy this thing and wants to start creating their product and sell their product. So the administration wasn't done. But I decided to write the orchestration part in Go. And this is, you know, this is where things will get a little bit more interesting. So after all this this, you know, background story and whatnot, we can finally start to talk about what I'm talking about here. So the orchestration part is in Go. So what it is. So like I was saying, since I do have kind of a single tenant application, so every customer that would purchase this SaaS, so that would start a subscription, we'll need to, first of all, get some kind of installation of their own on the server. Get the application up and running. So it needs to be installed. It needs to be added to as a service. It needs to provision an SSL certificate and all of that. And I want everything to be automated, of course. So before going with Go, I started to check at I have one friend that was talking to me about Pi Infra. So I almost went with that, and I think it could have worked. But again, I mean, I found that it was maybe a little bit too much for my needs. So again, I have probably less than eight steps, which are, you know, kind of easy when you think about that. Deploying a Python Django application is not the hardest thing in the world. So I just need to architect that. And I wanted an easy way as well to be able to scale. So what I did is, well, I'm deploying everything on DigitalOcean. So for that project, I decided to manage my servers and whatnot. So this is mostly what I do often. This is, you know, I already did an episode on that. So I do really enjoy platform as a service, things like render.com, for example. And maybe fly.io these days. But again, fly.io is another interesting thing that, in my opinion, you know, if you don't really need to have your application deploy on the data center close to the user that are using that, I mean, the added complexity of having to to sync the all the databases everywhere. It's I don't know. I know that they are having a lot of library to help you do that. And to be frank, you know, I'm not super versed with Fly. I never used that yet. It's just that on paper it seems to be. I don't know. Again, it seems to be a little bit too much. But again, I'm probably wrong here. I need to give them some time. That's another problem. there's so many things to check sometimes that I mean, how can you do it all? It's crazy. You need to take decisions sometimes, and you need to just accept the fact that, you know what, for now, this is not going to happen. But I'm diverging again. So we were talking about the fact that I wanted to have some kind of control over what's going on, and having small VMs that I can provision as needed. So what I'm doing is that, so the idea will be to have the marketing website directly link to Stripe. So bear with me a little bit in here. So if you don't care about SaaS at all, this might not be the episode for you. But again, I'm a huge fan of software as a service. This is what I've been doing for the last I don't know, since 2008. this is my passion. To be frank, I really really like this kind of business model. It's not about building for me. It's all about, you know, the overall customer development, marketing, sales, support. I like really really enjoy when you put something together and you just try to grow it. It's interesting. Granted, I have it's never happened to me to have a huge success so far. It will come. I'm still confident. So yeah, closing that parenthesis. So continuing. So I wanted to have something very 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 scalable, but easy to maintain, and not having to introduce too many third party and whatnot. So far, it's pretty straightforward, I think. So again, like I'm saying in my course, I always split my marketing site, from my application. But for this, it's interesting because the application is a multi-tenant web application, so you don't really have a backend available to perform some kind of account creation and whatnot. So I wanted to not have to deploy a go back and probably in this instance to just accept a new sign up. So what I thought was, you know, why not just use the new Stripe payment link? So if you don't know, Stripe did some crazy changes in the last I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years. This is incredible, the amount of things that they have built. And one of them is, well, first of all, you have this great customer portal that really helps, because if you're familiar a little bit with my Build a SaaS course, when I wrote it, basically all of that things they were not existing. So back then, even though Stripe was kind of very easy to use, it always has been kind of easy to use, you still had to build a lot of functionality for your, you know, billing, subscription management and whatnot. Especially if you had some interesting distinction of what the built-in functionalities of Stripe was offering. You know, I've built a lot of billing system myself, so on top of Stripe. But now, I mean, now you do have a lot of things, and the customer portal is very great. Basically, you just generate some kind of session on your backend, and you redirect the customer there, and they can print their their invoice history. They can change their plan, change their cards. So all of that, you needed to do that yourself back then. And not only the back end, you had to do the front end as well. Which, if you know me a little bit, you know, being blind, you know, everything front end is always not very interesting, to be frank. So the idea was, you know what, let's leverage this payment link. So a payment link is a little bit more easier again. It's a little bit up the stack, if you will. And now you just have a link. So you don't even need a backend for that. So you generate that on the Stripe dashboard itself. You put that on your pricing page, on your marketing website. So the button directly direct them to a payment link. And now you can leverage the webhook from Stripe. And this is what I'm doing. So basically, I'm leveraging the, I think it's the customer subscription created, something like that. So one of their event. And this is, you know, this is where I start the orchestration of the deployment of this single tenant web application. So the webhook is going to be called as soon as the customers, you know, a new customer is, you know, entering their credit card and doing the onboarding process on Stripe. So this will call my my orchestrator, if you will. So for that, I knew that I was going to have two parts. So there's this orchestrator that will be responsible for receiving the Stripe webhook and initializing some kind of deployment, and lots of things that I will go over in a couple of minutes. But the second component of this was you know, to have some kind of agent on all of the droplets. So droplets are DigitalOcean VMs, if you will. So all of the servers that I want to be offering some space for tenant to host their application. So let's say I have three droplets, for example. So the orchestrator will need to first decide, well, where am I going to send this new customer? So after receiving the webhook, there's some kind of decision to be made. So the orchestrator has a very, very a local database. It's a CSV file. Yeah, I know. I mean, but I don't need anything more. There's a little bit of CSV file, which I think there's four columns. So a dynamic customer name, which I'm picking from a list of five letters English keyword. So this is going to be used for all of the things that we will mention. But let's say the systemd services, for example, and the directory where this application will be deployed. Anyways, so there's a CSV file that attach a tenant with an IP address. So the IP address of the droplet. And a couple of other information, like the Stripe customer ID, for example. A very, very simple CSV file. And I know, I mean, there's probably some of you that are saying, wow, this guy is crazy. But no, I mean, I'm building a SaaS. I'm not building a multi-billion, whatever, organization. This is the beauty of software as a service. You are not having your... Oh man, I'm a software engineer. I need to do things, you know, I need to over engineer, because let's face it. I mean, I will be totally, I don't know, maybe it will not get through, or I don't know, you know, warning sign, this is going to be an opinion, but I think that sometimes we are over engineering our solution. I don't know if it's just me or, but yeah, again, I'm building a SaaS. I'm building it for myself. I'm a one person company. This is going to work. And the day that I do have, I don't know, let's say 5,000 customers, then yes, I could then have the money and the probably more resources to do anything more complicated. For now, the goal is to validate this idea, this product. Is it going to work? Is it going to, you know, bring me any money? So there's no reason for me to put anything else there. So again, we have this webhook from Stripe. The orchestrator is being called. There's a new entry that is added to the CSV file. And this thing is like round robin deciding where this deployment will go. So based on the usage of the VMs that the agent is deployed to. So which are the less busy, if you will. So the one with the last installation, and this is the target. So now there's a simple HTTP call that is done to this IP address to this agent and tells them, you know what, this is a new tenant. So it's sending a tenant over a JSON payload. So via an HTTP post, very simple, and this agent is running a bash script and everything. Everything is embedded into the program itself. So the binary. So I'm using the embed package from Go. So the nice thing about that is I'm building the orchestrator and the agent on the same code base. So there's a couple of web handler, if you will, some kind of endpoint that only are there if you are in the orchestrator mode. I just have a flag, so basically I'm passing a dash O to indicate, you know what, you are in the orchestrator mode, and otherwise you are an agent, and it's the same code base. I find that it's good enough for now. So the agent is receiving some kind of data, and they are using the same exact project. So this is the same Go module. This is the same. So they are all sharing structure and whatnot. So again, it's nice. So the agent is responsible for making sure that everything is going to deploy correctly. So in my case, I'm embedding some files in this binary. So again, the bash script that is going to be executed, the systemd services, the systemd socket, because Django application use a Unix socket to communicate. So from the service, not from the service, but from your HTTP proxy. So instead of calling a HTTP endpoint to do the reverse proxy, you are calling a Unix service, a Unix socket, excuse me. So again, I mean, those files are there, and it's very, very clean. You can imagine having an HTTP handler that just receive, you know what, you are receiving a new tenant, you need to do its setup. So what I'm doing for the communication, so again, did not wanted to go with gRPC for that. I mean, it's crazy. I just have one endpoint for now. Very simple. And this endpoint is called, is receiving some kind of action. So I wanted one endpoint, and it's going to always be the same kind of data that will be sent to an agent. So it's an action with a tenant actually. So, you know, like create this tenant, for example, or delete this tenant, or update this tenant. So very, very simple HTTP handler, just receiving this action, and it performs the desired action. So in our case, we are still inside the create tenant flow that I'm explaining. So yes, this small agent write the systemd file. I'm using Caddy as the HTTP server to do the the reverse proxy and all the TLS termination and whatnot. I'm using an Nginx most of the time. It will be the first time I'm using Kaddy. If you don't know Kaddy, it's a very nice Go HTTP server. So it's in the Nginx realm, I would say. So yes, I'm using that. It's going to serve me well versus having to do a new Nginx blocks a block with the Let's Encrypt manual registration and things like that. So normally this is what I'm using Nginx with Let's Encrypt because I only do that once, and after that there's some cron that automatically renew the certificate. But now I wanted something more automated and not really have to mess with this process of renewing and getting this certificate. And Kaddy is great. I also was a little bit curious to discover that. I've been hearing about that for a long time, and yes, it's nice. It seems to be a very nice nice Go project. Some files are generated. Like I was saying, the system file and the Kaddy block that will need to be inserted into the Kaddy configuration file, and after that, it's just a matter of moving those files to the etc systemd system. So my services are using the five letters word that I was talking about. And so same for the directory. So you can imagine the bash script being, again, not very complicated. So you basically create a directory, you copy the latest version of the application. So it's taking that from Git directly, so from GitHub. And from there, it's a typical, Python Django application of getting the dependencies installed, migrating the database, and registering the systemd daemon, enabling it, starting it, the same good old things that if you have managed a server at some point you are familiar with that. If not, then I don't know what to tell you. This is this is interesting. So sometime if you haven't done that, it's nice. I think for me infrastructure is as fun as programming, to be frank. Sometimes I do enjoy going there, and I've been doing that all my career, if you will. So. But I understand that sometimes some programmers don't really want to go there, mess around and things like that. It's totally fine. But let's just say that this agent is just responsible for doing some kind of DevOps manipulation and infrastructure things. And after that, that's it. That's mostly it for from a new customer point of view. So what's going on? So after that, they are receiving an email and something like this is your store URL and whatnot, and they go there and they start managing their store, creating their product. So they have their completely own isolated installation. Database, everything is self-contained, very easy to back up, very easy to maintain. So the sad part is that, because there is downside for that. And again, let's remember why I did it like that. And I'm not recommending that at all. I mean, if you are going to build a SaaS and you don't need to have multi-tenant at first, don't go that route. It's way more complicated than just having a backend and having all your users using the same backend and database. It's easier to go from single tenant to multi tenant than going the other way around, to be completely frank. So yeah, so this is what, you know, this is why, and the reason why I'm in that situation is that because I built that for me. I did not add any intention to publish that application as a product at all at first. I did it because yes, you know, the product that I was using was changing their pricing. They removed a paid price and they made it paid. So I mean, it was not working for me anymore. And you know, being a programmer at some point and being someone that I've been building so many application, so I did that with my invoicing package as well. So I was using FreshBook, and I at some point I said, you know what, you know, screw that, let's build it. And it took me 1 week, and now I do have my own invoicing software. Am I going to publish that as a product? No, not at all. But so yes, so that's the story of this. I think it's interesting to, you know, a couple of things to keep in mind. Sometimes you don't need to have a super complicated solution to fix a problem. And you know, would I have done that inside an organization that needs to. Of course not. I mean, this is not the same situation, and I've experienced both. And you know, my experience is more on the smaller project side. But I, you know, I've seen the enterprise as well, and to be honest, sometimes I don't know, things get a little bit more complicated than what they should be, in my opinion, sometimes. And yeah, the over-engineering is real. It's real, and it's something that you don't really do in you know, small bootstrap startup software as a service world, because at the end of the day, you're not there to build something. You're there to sell it. You're there to make a living out of what you want to build, and have the life that comes with it. So for me, it's all about that. It always has been, it always will be. It's not about, you know, building my project, or it's not about the fact that, oh, you might not want to like to work with other people. It's not that at all. For me, it's all about, you know, waking up on the morning and working on my own things, my own company, things that brings money to, you know, to my family and whatnot. So, and not having, yeah, it might not be about control as much as just having the choice of saying, you know what, today I'm not feeling well, I will not work, or you know what, this week let's do that, let's add the ABC feature, or let's try to reach a new audience. So it might sound like, okay, you are a control freak, you want to, well, you don't have any other choice but to have some control when you are building your own things. It's not that at all. It's just to have, yes, the sentiment of achievement is so great when you finally succeed. And I you know, I touched some kind of success at some point with LeadFuse. So it was a SaaS I've built in 2015, 16, something like that. So we had 6 employees at some point. So I mean, I know a little bit what it feels to have some kind of success, and this is great. It's also very, very hard, you know, because now you have everything on your shoulder, and you know, if you want to put some food on the table at the end of the day, then you know, your product needs to bring money, and this, you know, this is really what I like about that. So I have kind of my own destiny on my end. So I will see. It's the product is not launched yet, so but I thought it would be interesting to just explain explain what I have for the orchestration, because yeah, I mean, again, it's probably very simple. So if you were to talk to some infrastructure people and told them about this thing, they would probably say something like, "Wow, this is probably not going to scale," or this is not how I would do that. I would have used whatever Jenkins or any kind of, you know, Terraform with AWS and things. No, that's not that. You don't do that when you are building a SaaS. You're not over-engineering the solution as a technical problem, because the problems that you need to solve first is how to sell this product, how to get money. And this is not done via technology. This is not done via coding. Does that mean that I'm doing shitty code? Not at all. It's not what I mean. But you still need to draw the line. And you know, I'm kind of paraphrasing a little bit what I'm saying in my course. So build SaaS app. So again. So hopefully that was a little bit interesting. It's very hard sometimes to know exactly what kind of story that would be interesting in this podcast and whatnot. So I mean, I'm trying some things. I'm still trying to line up some guests as well. So from here it will be a mix of guests and me going solo in between. So right on that. Thank you for listening, and see you next week. All right, that's it for this week. I would really appreciate if you can talk or share about this podcast. It's always helpful. Also, another way to support the show is by purchasing my course. There's always a link in the show notes. So on that, see you next week.